Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results for the 3 months to the 31st of March 2021. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question-and-answer session. And just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Holland Kay, Chief Executive Officer. Please begin your meeting.
Well, hello and welcome to all of you who've dialed in to join our Quarter 1 2021 results presentation. I hope you're keeping well and your family are also safe and well, and also that you are able to start getting out and about a bit more if COVID is allowing you to do so. I'm John Holland-Kay, Chief Executive at Heathrow Airport, and joining me virtually are Javier Echave, CFO, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. Today we'll present our key operational and strategic highlights, including progress on our three-phase plan in response to COVID-19, a review of our financial position, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we'll conclude by taking your questions. So let me start by setting the scene with a quick overview of our key metrics on slide 4. Just over 12 months after COVID was declared a pandemic, we're still feeling the very severe impact of this at Heathrow. Traffic fell by 89% to 1.7 million passengers compared to the first quarter of 2020 and 91% compared to 2019. That's about 15,000 to 20,000 passengers a day. With only a fraction of our usual passenger traffic, revenue declined by 72%. And that decline is dramatic, but could have been far worse without the actions we've successfully taken to protect our revenues. On the cost side, we're also seeing the cash benefits of the early and decisive actions taken during 2020, reducing our operating costs by a third to £185 million. As a result, our adjusted EBITDA only declined to a loss of £20 million in the period. Given the continued uncertainty around traffic recovery, we've also strengthened our liquidity since the start of the year and raised a further £1.3 billion of debt financing globally. This means we have sufficient financial cover for at least 15 months in the extreme scenario of no revenue, and we have pre-funded all of our 2021 debt repayments. We know that there is plenty of pent-up demand to travel, and there are signs that things are starting to improve with the successful rollout of vaccines and the initial steps taken to ease the UK lockdown. As a result, we have revisited our traffic outlook and are currently considering a range of scenarios going from 13 to 36 million passengers in 2021. And we think this is just a realistic reflection of the uncertainty that we face, particularly given the dependency on government policy for opening up international travel. And Javier will provide more details on that in the financial review. Now, you may be concerned that a lower traffic forecast means that our costs are too high, and we'll have to make deep cuts now to the £942 million of OPEX we mentioned in our last investor report. But in fact, in December, we cut our costs to the lowest level we could get them, which is why our operating cost run rate is already around £780 million. And any increase above that will be to add cost back in to service any growth in demand. So this puts us in a strong financial position and frees up management time to focus on the recovery, not on cost reduction. Turning to slide 5 to look at our strategic priorities. Our focus remains on operating a safe and resilient Heathrow at a lower cost while delivering excellent service to passengers. We can only rebuild our finances by increasing passenger numbers and have been very active in working with the UK government, our airline partners and others to establish a risk-based approach to reopening travel. We are working to ensure that investors get an adequate return for the risk that they take through the 8-7 regulatory settlement, in addition to the £300 million immediate adjustment that the CAA has already made. And we continue to work to decarbonize global aviation, and this is starting to gain momentum. And finally, though it may not be the immediate priority, we know that expanding Heathrow in the right way will be essential to fulfilling the government's ambition of a global Britain. Moving to slide 7 to look at the progress on our business protection plan, we'll start with our fly-safe model. And our first priority is always the safety of our passengers and colleagues. We're pleased that our COVID Safe program has been recognized externally by Airports Council International, the CAA, and Public Health England. To support the government's mass vaccination program, part of our head office where I'm sitting now was transformed into an NHS COVID-19 vaccination center in March, and I actually had my first jab there a few weeks ago. That's a fantastic facility for the local community with capacity for up to 5,000 vaccinations per day, which is a real benefit for our colleagues as well as our passengers. And together with our airline partners, we are also working on providing digital health certificates. And these will be critical if we can integrate these with the existing airport systems and processes to make sure that we have the frictionless journeys that passengers have been used to bring a swift recovery to air travel. And in the meantime, we continue to push for common international standards for health in aviation. Slide 8 gives the results of the management actions to protect the business. And preserving cash was clearly a first priority for us, given the uncertainty we face. You'll see here that the rapid and decisive actions we took to cut costs have helped to bring our monthly cash burn down by over 50% since Q1 2020. The significant reduction is driven by OPEX savings, as well as with the annualized benefits flowing through into 2021, the reduction of our CAPEX plans, and the interest savings secured through the reprofiling of our swap portfolio. At the same time, we improved our liquidity position up to £4.5 billion after including our most recent Canadian dollar transactions, and that's 41% improvement on our position at the start of the crisis. Slide 9 shows how the UK is faring against our European rivals. And last year, you might remember, Charles de Gaulle overtook us as Europe's largest airport by passenger volume. This year, we actually sit at the moment behind all European hub airports in passenger numbers. And that's simply because EU hubs have access to their domestic markets and an EU market that we do not. And in fact, in the UK, international travel to any country is banned at the moment with a significant fine if anyone travels without a good reason. But now the UK government has a chance to use its lead in vaccinations, and if it opens up on May the 17th, we aim to take on our rivals once more and win the recovery. If you look at cargo, actually, you'll see that the damage that COVID has done on UK trade, with volumes still down by 23% compared to 2019. And of course, cargo volumes from Heathrow go in the belly hold of passenger planes. So without those planes flying, there haven't been the trade routes from the UK that exporters can use to get their goods to market. But meanwhile, Schiphol and Frankfurt, who are more dependent on dedicated freighters, have been able to increase their cargo over the same period of time. So getting the restart underway will really help with the UK economic recovery, encouraging trade, tourism, and the investments that are needed to rebuild the UK's economy. And on slide 10, we're just taking a look at how vaccinations have started to roll out internationally and how they will help to restart international travel. And we all know that there is a huge pent-up demand for international travel. People have been cut off from their loved ones for over a year, and many of those trips that weren't taken last year will be taken in the coming months as people try to reconnect. There are lots of businesses who want to go and visit their customers. And yes, there'll be people who just need a holiday after a year of lockdown. And it is telling that the most Googled thing as we came towards the end of lockdown was, where can I go on holiday? And the question is when travel restarts and how quickly it recovers. And that's down to the spread of the virus and variants of concern and government policy around vaccination and risk appetite. In the US, you can see that over 40% of the population had been vaccinated by April 2021, and that's been increasing. And you can see the recovery in air travel happening in parallel at the bottom of the chart, back to around 60% of where it was in 2019. And anecdotally, people in the States tell me that once people start returning to the office and going out for lunch and the restaurants reopen, the next thing they do is start thinking about flying for business. So it feels like business in the States is getting more back to normal than people might have thought 12 months ago. In the UK, we now have over 60% of adults vaccinated with the first dose and 30% with the second dose. And it cannot be long now before we also are able to travel freely. On slide 11, we look at what's needed to restart international travel safely. And the UK government's current plan is to resume international travel from May the 17th at the earliest, and we expect they will confirm that in the next week or so. In the meantime, the government's Global Travel Task Force has recommended a risk-based approach, which was in line with our own proposal, and that will allow us to restart travel while keeping the country safe. We think that the green list of countries could include Israel, the United States, Iceland, the Caribbean, Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia, and New Zealand, all markets served out of Heathrow, but that some of the big tourist markets, such as Spain and Greece, could soon follow before the July holiday season. For green countries, passengers will be expected to be tested for COVID before and after their flights using expensive PCR tests, regardless of whether they've been vaccinated. And we think the government should look at cheaper alternatives, including whether vaccination is an alternative to testing, as many countries have done. And that will make sure that travel remains affordable and as frictionless as possible. Now, the other thing we've been focusing on is the checks at the UK border, which currently require all the documentation to show that you've had tests, booked further tests, and have a specific place to quarantine have been filled out, which has to be checked before you get on the plane and 100% checked at the border. This is too manual and needs to be simplified and automated. But until that happens, we need every immigration desk to be adequately resourced so that there are no queues in immigration. And that at the moment is one of our biggest bottlenecks and concerns that could hold back the restart of travel. You may have picked up that we've been asked by the Department of Health to provide a dedicated arrivals facility for passengers from red list countries. That's something we're very happy to do as long as the government pays our additional costs and Border Force can provide a decent level of service. But I am encouraged that the government is looking to promote more inbound tourism through their tourism recovery plan in May, and that means that they could open travel from the US even before the US lifts its travel ban for flights coming back into the UK for non-US citizens. On slide 12, we'll look at the third phase of our plan, which is to build back better. We've talked a lot in the past about our award-winning Heathrow 2.0 plan for sustainable growth, which sets out how we improve life for colleagues and communities, contribute to a thriving economy, and help to tackle global challenges such as climate change. And given the impact of the pandemic, we have been revisiting this to make sure it fits with the current needs of colleagues and communities and also our more constrained resources. And we'll be updating that later in 2021 and making sure that is tied into all of our incentive plans so we've got complete line of sight. But I'll just touch on a few things that we have achieved in the first few months of this year. First of all, we've made real progress with closing our gender pay gap, and I'm very pleased with this, but there's a lot more to do, and we'll keep working on that, and we will be publishing an ethnicity pay gap shortly. We've also made good progress on minimizing noise pollution for local communities. They can be disturbed by late-running flights that depart after 11:30, and these have been much easier to control, as you would imagine, given the fewer number of flights, and we've kept those down to only 9 late-running flights in the first quarter. And we've also been helping to support the Heathrow Community Trust, which is an independent charity that gives funds to improve the quality of life for communities near the airport. And for the first time in February, we donated £41,000 after we outperformed our ESG metrics built into the revolving credit facility. And finally, as the UK's only hub airport, we have a critical role to play in the economy nationally and locally. And we've done our best to protect jobs on the airport through the pandemic and maintain the London Living Wage for all colleagues directly employed at the airport. We remain committed to transitioning all of our supply chain colleagues through to the London Living Wage, and we're reviewing our plan to deliver that as soon as we can. On slide 13, we're just giving an update on our progress to achieve net zero emissions in global aviation by 2050. Now, Heathrow was the first airport in the world to sign up to the Paris Accord on climate change, and last year we achieved carbon neutrality in our airport operation. But for many years, we've been working to secure a global commitment to net zero aviation by 2050 and a plan to do so. That seemed a pretty stretching goal a couple of years ago when we first set it out. But we've made amazing progress. And we welcome the UK government's sixth carbon budget, which looks to accelerate decarbonising aviation by including emissions from international flights in the UK's climate budget. And we agree with the Prime Minister that aviation growth and a green future are not mutually exclusive. The government has now set up the Jet Zero Council to deliver a plan to decarbonise through increased use of sustainable aviation fuel and zero-emission aircraft. And we're delighted that our Chief Operating Officer, Emma Gilthorpe, was appointed as Chief Executive of the Council in March. For SAF to become a real option, the government must act now to introduce a mandate that requires airlines to use a minimum of 10% of sustainable aviation fuel by 2030, rising to at least 50% by 2050. And that will send the demand signal that producers need to start scaling up the supply. But we're making good progress even without a mandate. Over 70% of Heathrow airlines have already committed to net zero by 2050. That's a fantastic achievement. And around 60% have also committed to 10% of sustainable aviation fuel use by 2030. And that is ahead of the Committee for Climate Change's most ambitious target for 2030, which was 7%. So if the industry delivers on its commitment and if government sets the right ambitious mandates, we will be able to grow in aviation and get to net zero. And finally, regulatory updates. You'll have seen the CAA's decision earlier this week around our proposed RAB adjustment, and you may remember our request sought to reinforce the protections built into our settlement against unlimited downside risk triggered by these exceptional circumstances. While the CAA agreed that this is exceptional circumstances and intervention was needed, they have only provided to date an interim immediate adjustment of £300 million and will have a further review of this as part of the H7 settlement later this year. The decision so far does not address the imbalance of risk and return that was not priced into the settlement, and if this isn't corrected, it will only lead to higher prices, undermine investors' confidence in UK-regulated businesses, and put at risk the government's infrastructure agenda. And looking forward to H7, the CAA published its Way Forward document earlier this week that gives some guidance on how they are thinking about H7, including confirming that it will be a five-year period starting in January 2022, and some options for risk sharing. A more detailed plan will be issued over the summer. I'll now hand over to Javier to talk about our financial performance.
Thank you, Jan, and hello, everyone. I'm delighted and I'm really grateful to have you this afternoon, and I hope that you and your loved ones are keeping safe and well. I will now share with you an overview of our financial performance, and I will start on slide 16. So, obviously, with traffic volumes down almost 89% in the first quarter of the year, revenue declined by 72%, somewhat offset by the benefits of management actions taken to optimize our income. From a cost perspective, costs declined by over 30% in the quarter, also reflecting the impact of cost-saving initiatives implemented last year. Altogether, this means that adjusted EBITDA declined more than 100% to losses of 20 million for the first 3 months of the year. On top of these EBITDA losses, and when adding annual depreciation charge of 185 million and net interest payable of 124 million, our losses before taxes in the period total 329 million. Outside income statement, capital expenditure decreased by 77% to 52 million as we continue to constrain investment to the minimum while safe level to protect our cash position. In parallel, we have ensured we kept our net debt in check to protect our financing metrics, and actually we saw net debt decreasing at the end of March. By 31st of March, our pro forma cash position amounted to £4.5 billion at Heathrow Finance, taking into account the Canadian dollar transaction we recently concluded. Let's now take a closer look to all the details, starting with revenue on slide 17. As mentioned, overall revenue fell by 72% during the first quarter, and obviously that's primarily driven by traffic. Aeronautical revenue declined by 77%, driven by a rapid deterioration in passenger numbers, as well as a significant reduction in pricing year on year, 18% reduction in aeronautical charges that is helping airlines in the most difficult crisis. Our retail revenue declined by 80% as a combination of passenger reduction, as well as government restrictions for non-essential shopping and the significant impact of government policy on VAT. As the government abolished VAT and tax-free shopping at airports from 1st of January 2021, even more pressure has been added to our retail income, and that could potentially increase consumer charges by more than 15% from next year, if not reverse. This government decision leaves Britain as the only country in Europe without a tax-free shopping scheme for international visitors and undermines the UK's competitiveness. We have teamed up with World Duty Free and Global Blue to judicially review this decision, and we are currently awaiting for the outcome. To finalize their income, other revenues decreased by 48%, demonstrating relative resilience in other regulated charges as well as in property income. So obviously, despite this challenging environment, we continue looking for opportunities to optimize our revenue, particularly on cargo, or with digital initiatives for our retailers and strong rent management. Additionally, we remain prudent and looking very carefully and taking proactive steps in and working with airlines to ensure that we keep bad debt well under control. Moving into costs now on slide 18, we deliver 33% of cost reduction in the first 3 months of 2021, and that reflects the huge effort implemented in 2020. We are now getting the annualized benefit of all our business transformation and supplier contract renegotiations. And besides, the consolidation of our operations into a smaller footprint allow us to also reduce maintenance and utilities costs. The raft of all the cost savings initiatives put in place last year means that today we are in a very lean position. If we were going to annualize our Q1 OPEX run rate and removing the one-off items, we would end up 2021 with a forecast OPEX of around £780 million, which is a number well below our forecast December report of £942 million. As you can see, this remarkable progress on our controllable cost is still contrasting with business rates, which are essentially unchanged compared to the last year. Government financial support continues being limited and at best inadequate, and adding more and more pressure to our controllable costs. As John mentioned earlier, given the high degree of uncertainty around traffic recovery, we are now considering a range of scenarios for 2021, going from 13 to 36 million passengers. Obviously, as a cautious CFO, I want to make sure that we are best prepared financially for all eventualities and we strike the right balance, allowing us to benefit from the recovery when it comes. At the top end of that traffic range, we will need to be ready to reopen Terminal 3 swiftly, and that requires careful operational planning that we are undergoing as we speak through, but will also involve additional costs, although we will still expect that that extra cost will come with even greater incremental revenues, and hence it will be value accretive in terms of EBITDA and cash flow. Talking precisely about cash flows, let's turn to slide 19. Probably one of the most remarkable achievements that despite operating with only 10% of passengers, this chart shows a strong outcome as we are still positive free cash flow in this challenging environment. Our focus remains firmly on protecting this position, but also you can see on the slide the impact of the reprofiling of some of our swap portfolio leading to essentially no interest paid during the period and providing more headroom to our covenants while traffic recovers. Cash flows in the period are also enhanced by the protections implemented in 2020 when some of the £600 million injected in Heathrow SP were used to prepay operational costs associated with 2021. Surprisingly, no dividends to ultimate shareholders were paid, and that will remain the case until our Heathrow finance gearing is back below 87.5%. Taking into account all the outflows in the period, net debt decrease by £67 million. Turning to slide 20 for a recap of what we have done to strengthen our financial resilience. Let's first look at the steps taken to protect the business through cash flow and balance sheet management. In terms of cash flow, we reduce our cost, as explained, and now we are enjoying the benefit of over 30% of cost reductions. In addition to this, we implemented further actions to optimize revenue. We reduced also our capital investment and focus on projects that ensure that the airports remain at any time safe and secure. We remain prudent and open to the opportunities that come with recovery. And in terms of recovery, obviously, the fact that we have a strong balance sheet will be extremely helpful. Following the £600 million capital injected in 2020, we further strengthened an already strong liquidity position and ensure covenants were protected. We delivered this with an additional £1.3 billion of liquidity, including an almost $1 billion Canadian dollar Class A bonds raised in early April, which is the largest offering for an airport issuer in Canada. We are starting to see the benefits of the reprofiling of our swap portfolio at the end of last year to protect our covenants, which allow us to turn into the recovery by protecting our credit ratings. Is the strong liquidity, Heathrow's strong liquidity, and its cost mitigation plan mentioned earlier that has been recognized by both Standard & Poor's and Fitch, and both credit rating agencies have affirmed our credit ratings in March 2021. We obviously remain committed to restoring stronger credit metrics in the medium term and welcome recent comments from our rating agencies around the key role that the regulator has to play in that respect. Moving on to the last phase, building back better. Over the last few years, we have accelerated engagement with investors and lenders on ESG. We are also encouraged by the growing appetite for sustainable financing and welcome the increased interest in engaging with our sustainability experts. Once again, I would like to take the opportunity to thank all the credit community for your exceptional support, even in the toughest circumstances. Moving to slide 21, we continue to monitor headroom to key ratios under our revised traffic forecast. While the headroom to gearing trigger events at Class A and Class B remains comfortable, the headroom to covenants at Heathrow Finance is more limited. As a reminder, the Heathrow Finance gearing covenant was revised to 93.5% in 2021, following the waiver secured in July 2020. Overall, the higher regulatory asset ratios compared to 2020 are the result of a declining RAP as we continue to prioritize liquidity during the crisis, and the £600 million equity injected in the SP group. Given the recent CAA's decision to adjust our regulatory asset base by £300 million, we expect the headroom to gearing trigger event and to covenants to improve over the rest of the year by around 2 percentage points. With regards to interest cover ratios, our forecasting and trigger events have occurred in relation to the forecast ICR for Class A and Class B debt for the 2020 financial year. And as a result, a distribution lockup is in place within Heathrow SP, providing additional protections to creditors at Heathrow SP. As a reminder, a trigger event means that no distribution can be made to Heathrow Finance to service debt, nor to pay dividends to ultimate shareholders. In the meantime, Heathrow Finance continue benefiting from a strong liquidity position sufficient to service debt until 2024 when the next maturity occurs. And obviously, finally, as you will remember, the Heathrow Finance interest cover ratio has been now being reinstated in 2021. Finally, I'm moving on to slide 22 to conclude the financial section of the presentation with our outlook. Obviously, while we are confident that significant pent-up demand for air travel has built up over the last year, it is clear that our traffic recovery remains highly dependent on government policy with regards to international travel. Considering these dynamics and the ongoing uncertainty surrounding the path and speed of traffic recovery, we have revised our 2021 traffic outlook to a range going from 13 million to 36 million passengers. We believe all scenarios within this range are currently plausible outcomes. In addition to what the upper and lower band of range mean for our operations, such as, for instance, the need to reopen Terminal 3 earlier, we are also considering potential impacts on our financing metrics. Across all scenarios considered within this range and other modeling assumptions, we forecast no breach of covenants at Heathrow SP level. There are, however, some scenarios in the lower part of the range where a breach of Heathrow Finance covenants is plausible. As a reminder, Heathrow Finance is governed by two covenants, a semi-annual gearing test and an annual interest cover ratio test. In the case of gearing, The combination of the $600 million capital injected last year together with the $300 million addition to the RAP recently confirmed by the CAA that will take place immediately protects headroom even in the lowest point of the traffic rates. Despite our very strong liquidity position, it's worth noting that the lowest half end of the passenger range would forecast interest cover ratio covenant breaches at Heathrow Finance. If we were facing that eventuality, obviously management would initiate further action that could involve seeking further covenant waivers or amendments from creditors. As a prudent business, we continue assessing all scenarios, especially taking into account any development around government policy to restart international travel as well as any additional mitigating actions. Hopefully, and as you can see today, we remain highly committed to transparency with the credit community, and we expect to provide our updated financial forecast in our next investor report due to be published in June 2021, or even earlier if we were seeing a material change in information. So with this, I have reached the end of the section, and I will hand over back to John to wrap up and take questions. Thank you all.
Great. Well, thank you, Javier. Well, there are clearly a lot of uncertainties out there in regards to traffic, but it feels like spring is on its way and things are starting to turn more positive. We've just laid out here the timeline that the government has said it will be following to give a sense for how we will get more information that will give us confidence about which path that we are on for recovery. We're expecting the earliest possible date for opening international travel to be the 17th of May. There'll be a first checkpoint before the summer peak on the 28th of June, which is a point at which the government can review whether the risk-based approach they've taken is still appropriate. And that's an opportunity to simplify it and over time move to frictionless travel for passengers visiting low-risk markets. And then there'll be further review points in July and October. But the list of countries that are on the green list can change from week to week, and we'll be working with the government to make sure we've got the right set of countries there. And I think there is a good chance that we will see an increase in the number of countries on that green list, particularly some of our major markets. And that will be key to coming towards the top end of that traffic range. So the good position that we are in now is that having acted early and decisively on our costs and having protected our talent with the very structured change that we've made, we can now focus on the recovery. We are starting to get Terminal 3 ready for reopening so that when the demand is ready, we can have the capacity to meet that need. And we're coordinating with all of the handlers, airlines, and retailers across the airport to make sure that we are ready to start on the 17th of May and that we can serve any level of demand. We're now emerging from COVID as a more competitive, leaner, and more agile business, and our confidence in our future has allowed us to keep working to decarbonize global aviation, which will secure the long-term future for our sector. And I want to thank all of my colleagues who have worked so hard in very difficult circumstances to get us to this position, and also our debt and equity investors for your financial support and the trust that you have shown in us. So we'll now take questions from participants, and I'll hand back to Nazanin to coordinate that.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. You can also submit your questions in the Q&A section of the WebEx at the bottom right of the screen. We have a question from the line of Sharon Wheaton from Columbia Threadneedle. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, John. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the presentation and the level of information as always. I've got a few questions coming from those comments you made. Could I just understand the rent protection, bad debt, and the range of scenarios? I mean, how do you go about, what steps have you taken to preserve, to protect your rent levels? And in terms of bad debt, how do you measure this and what does that metric look like now? And finally, across that range of scenarios here, what would be your base case?
Great. Good question, Sharon. And I'll ask Javier to answer in a bit more detail on the rent protection and bad debt. But Clearly, we've actually done very well to maintain good levels of payments, maintain all of our payment terms throughout this period, even though we've had very low levels of activity. And one of the things we're actively trying to manage is that at those lower ends of demand scenario, clearly it will be harder to maintain bad debt levels and rent protection. At the higher end, it'll be much easier and much more like business as usual. So there's the risk of a vicious cycle here or a virtuous spiral coming through. But Javier can probably comment more closely on the measures we have taken around rent protection and bad debt. But in terms of the range, we're not setting a base forecast. We may do that when we come to do the investor update in June, when we have more information from the government. But at the moment, we just want to make sure that we all understand it's a very uncertain time. We have to be realistic about that. And we want you to know that we are taking all the responsible measures to protect your investment in spite of the range of uncertainty. But Javi, let me leave you with the rent protection and bad debt.
Great. Thank you, John. And great question, Sharon. I think that probably what's really happening here is that we have taken a very, very proactive approach here. I think you might remember last year we were discussing this time our approach to minimum guarantees. At that point in time, we made the right decisions to make sure that we were discussing with our retail partners in an effective and an open way rather than sticking to a contract. And obviously that has rendered significant benefits during the year. Today we have seen a very limited increase in either bad debt or deferral on payments on rent. So I would say that this is the a recognition of the fantastic work that our commercial team has been practically doing during the last 12 months.
Okay.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you both.
And the next question comes from the line of Sophie Aldrich from Oakview Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you very much for the presentation. It was very helpful. I had a couple of questions. I'm more on the covenant side from slide 21. I just wondered if you could just recap on your covenant triggers and the headroom on these, and also the waiver secured and when the testing dates come back in.
Great. So good questions, and I thought there might be a bit of focus on covenants. Javi, do you want to pick that up?
Yes. So, Sophie, I think in terms of a recap, in our structure, we have two set of metrics. One is trigger events. Trigger events are protections, are effectively a mechanism to ensure that we are transparently informing to creators that some things might happen. Last year, we breached some of these trigger events, and the consequences of our trigger event is a dividend lockup. That's the main consequence. So since last year, the Hydro SP group cannot distribute cash, not even to service the debt of Hydro Finance. Having said that, Hydro Finance has a very strong liquidity position, and therefore Hydro Finance has plenty of cash to deal with the servicing debt over the next 2 years and even to the next big maturity in 2024. In terms of covenants, we have a different set of covenants at different parts of the group. As you know, we raise debt at three different levels, senior and junior at Hydro SP. In the case of Hydro SP, the covenant is calculated on an ICR basis on a three-year average. And in the case of Hydro SP, we are forecasting no breach of covenants based on the traffic and the cash flow assumptions that we have assumed in these traffic ranges. So any of the plausible traffic ranges comes with a forecast breach of covenants for Hydro SP. In the case of Hydro Finance, we have two tests, gearing and ICR. In the case of gearing, we are in a stronger position on the back of the support ultimately from equity shareholders on the back of the capital injection we did last year. And that has been exacerbated by the £300 million that we are adding as we speak to the RAP. Therefore, from a gearing perspective, we have more mitigated headroom under all levels of all points of the traffic range. In the case of interest cover ratio for Heathrow Finance, and as I mentioned, we can see ourselves that if traffic were performing at the lower half end of the range, we would see a breach of covenants only for interest cover ratio at Heathrow Finance. Obviously, it's worthwhile reminding that we have plenty of liquidity, and in the case of interest cover ratio, obviously, the only solution that we were finding ourselves in that eventuality would be to engage with Heathrow Finance creditors as soon as possible to try to find a waiver for this technical breach.
Great. Thanks, Andy. So it's only Heathrow Finance ICR that we're concerned about at the lower levels of this range. We see it as being a temporary issue because as soon as demand comes back, that will cure the problem. But because it is driven by cash flow from operations, that's not something we can create. It can only come through more passengers using the airport, given that we've already done everything we can do around costs. So that's one of the reasons why we have been so energetic on working with government and others to try to get international travel restarted as soon as we can in a safe way, because that is the best way to protect our business.
Thanks, that's very helpful. And on the waiver side,
waivers, Savvy's or Sally, is there anything you want to add on waivers?
No, I think I said at this stage we are continue working with the government, and obviously if we're finding ourselves in a situation where engagement with creditors is required, we will inform creditors as soon as possible.
Okay, thank you. And I just had one other question. It was on just deferred costs. I mean, you briefly touched on it, but just is there anything I should be thinking about in the next quarter or a couple of quarters of deferred costs that have been postponed and that are worth discussing?
Abby, do you want to cover that?
I think in terms of costs, obviously the focus has been to really deliver the painful but needed actions in 2020. We are today in a very lean position. Obviously, as traffic ramps up, we will incur into some costs to serve passengers in the way they deserve. So we would see variable costs picking up as traffic picks up. But obviously, that traffic, that cost will come with incremental revenue. So net EBITDA would improve. So I think the bulk of the cost changes have been already implemented. And from here, we would expect the situation to improve.
Yeah. And the 185 million you can see here is a clean number. So it doesn't include any kind of timing adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Sophie.
And we have one more question from the line of Paul Dew from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
I'm delighted with the gender diversity of the questions, by the way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's all plans. Thank you very much for the presentation. Very useful. And thanks for all the hard work during the quarter. Three questions, if I may. You talked about the kind of issues with the border force and potentially the government wanting a separate terminal being opened up for passengers. How are those talks going on the border force? And then is there any scenario where the government could kind of force you to open a terminal without providing the costs that you mentioned you would need to be covered? That's the first question. Second question is, there was some headlines, I think, around Dixon's closing some stores and potentially the ones at Heathrow. Would you just be able to give us an update on what you're seeing on the retail stores and if you've had any kind of other stores say they'll close? And then also just an update on when you expect the results of the legal case against the government VAT decision would be very helpful. And then the final one, on the cash burn, would you just be able to give some color on kind of how you expect that to progress through this year? Is this first quarter kind of representative of the quarters that we'll see going forward? And how will interest costs kind of develop as we go through the year? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. You should join our finance team. It's a great probing question. So let me take the first ones, and then perhaps I'll ask Javi to cover the cash burn. So border force, we have been discussing this with the Home Office, Department of Health and Social Care, and the DfT for some time. They do have a plan to automate the checking of all the forms through the e-gates in immigration, which they are getting on with. That's a good step forward, and that will move back to a more seamless journey through the airport. But that only starts at the end of May and concludes after the summer. So that won't be enough, as far as we can see, to make sure that we'll have smooth journeys through the airport. And that's why we are putting so much focus on making sure that Border Force is adequately resourced. And we all understand that it's going to take a little bit longer to go through the border if you've got lots of checks to be taken. But no one can understand why you might have to stand in a queue for 6 hours, as occasionally has happened, when there are only two officers on the desk. Border Force has hundreds of officers. And if this was a supermarket, they would be opening more desks as soon as the queue started to build up. And they need the same kind of mentality to make sure that queues don't build up, not just at Heathrow, but across all ports over the summer. So that's why we don't like to raise these issues publicly and draw attention to the matter. But the truth is that people blame Heathrow for queues at the border, and we are unable to fix them ourselves. And it's only by making this a more public issue that we can get the attention that it needs, and hopefully we can work with Border Force to fix it. In terms of a separate arrivals area, we can't be required to open something like that. We are looking at having a separate arrivals flow for red list countries coming into Terminal 3 as a proof of concept, and that's something we'd run before we open T3 as a full arrival and departures terminal. And that's really just to test how it's going to work, whether Border Force can deliver a good level of service, and we can accommodate that within our current cost envelope. But if it comes to opening Terminal 4 arrivals flow specifically for red list countries, that's just something that we cannot afford to do, and nor can we be required to do. And actually, I point to the interest cover ratio challenge as one of the reasons why this isn't something that we can do at our own discretion. And in the scheme of things, from a government point of view, this is fairly trivial compared to all of the other challenges that they have successfully overcome. In terms of retailers, you may know we've had a few retailers who sadly went into liquidation earlier on in the crisis. One, which is John Lewis, who chose to come out because they had a change of strategy. Dixon's is the only one that I'm aware of that has come out as a result of the VAT decision. I'm not aware of any other retailer who is considering that. And that's partly because the margins in electrical retail are very thin, and without the price advantage that comes with VAT reclaim, then it really doesn't make economic sense for them. And it's a great shame because they're a good company, got a fantastic team at the airport. We are talking with a number of alternative electrical retailers who are keen to come in. As we are talking, made progress on other retailers who are going to fill the spaces left by those who've sadly gone into liquidation over the last 12 months. So we will be opening up new catering outlets and also some new retailers, either with dedicated facilities or just as a white box to give us a bit of flexibility and bring a bit of variety into the retail space. So we'll start to see that coming in very quickly. The result of the VAT claim, we don't expect to come in until next month at the earliest, so we're keeping a close eye on that. And then, Javi, in terms of cash burn,
yes.
The question was whether quarter one was representative.
Yeah, so Paul, I think great question. I think in terms of to explain what we have been doing on the interest paid, let me just step back and explain briefly what we have done. So you might remember that last year we injected capital proceeds into the SP group, and we thought that a great use of that cash was to restructure some of our swaps to protect creditors in the short term while traffic was recovering. So we did three things last year. One is we prepaid £100 million of interest. Second, we restructured several several swaps, and that created interest savings in 2021 of around £300 million that we will catch up on payments in future years. And then the last thing that we have done this year is that we have brought forward receivables on those swaps of around £40 million. So obviously the combination of these three things are helping reducing the interest payments in 2021. And in terms of cash flow for the next quarters, we will provide you all the details as part of our investor report in June, when we will be able to explain you all the component parts. So if you bear with us, we will share all the details pretty soon in June.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you. And hopefully you can find a store to sell people their phone chargers when they forget them. Thank you very much.
Definitely.
Thanks, Paul.
So we've actually had we were going out to tender anyway for that space because I think Dixon has been with us for 14 years and we felt it was time to have a competitive tender. And we've had a lot of interest from quite interesting organisations to come in. So we are ahead of the game on filling that space. Great. Next question.
There are no further questions on the phones.
Fab. And are there any questions from any other?
John, there's one question on the Q&A, which I'll read for you. When do you expect the next move from the Civil Aviation Authority in regards to adjustments to Heathrow's RAP?
So we expect the £300 million adjustment to be immediate, which, of course, is welcome for the reasons that Javier has outlined. But we don't expect to hear any more until we get the first proposal from the CAA sometime over the summer. And it's unclear at the moment whether that will be early, mid, or late summer. So that'll be the first sign of that. But we'll keep a close eye on that and obviously keep you up to date. Great. Well, look, if there are no other questions, just want to thank you for your interest and for the really great questions you've had here. I'm sure that if you have any other questions, please do follow up with our finance team. They'd be happy to help. Really want to thank you for all your support. It has really helped us to get through what's been a very difficult year, and we are now starting to see light at the end of the tunnel. This is a question of when we turn around and not if. Sorry, I'm seeing a question coming up. Sally, do you want to read this out for me?
Yes, there's one more question, John and Javier. It's to say, based on the current OPEX and CAPEX level, what is your cash flow break even at the passenger level?
Well, I think, John, if I can address that one, I think at this stage we are just disclosing our latest view in terms of traffic range. In terms of what that means financially, apart from the important comments we have made today about covenants, we will provide full details on our investor report. So I'm afraid that today we are not in position to share further information on cash flow projections.
Great. Good. Thanks, Javi. So this is probably the point of maximum uncertainty. We will know more, I think, in June and be able to give you a tighter view of what the outlook is. I hope you can see that we have acted early and decisively. We've taken all the right decisions to protect your investment, and we're in a very good place at the moment. We're just getting ready to go, and we look forward to welcoming you back to travel through Heathrow when you next get the opportunity. So thanks for your time, and we'll look forward to our next call.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.